This is Plant-Based Briefing. Diverticulosis, when our most common gut disorder hardly existed, and Does Fiber Really Prevent Diverticulosis? By Dr. Michael Greger at NutritionFacts.org. I'm inserting a quick note here to say that I had an audio issue starting with episode 787, and unfortunately it's going all the way through 794 because I recorded them all at once. I can go back and sort of fix them, but it's not great, so just bear with me, and they will get back to normal starting with 795. So now let's get back to today's episode. And I'm your host, Marian Erickson. This is the Curated Content Plant-Based Podcast, where I find a variety of articles related to plant-based and vegan living, get permission, and narrate them to you here in about 10 minutes or less every weekday. Today, these articles are short, but they're on the same topic, so I'm combining them into one episode. So now let's get to today's plant-based briefing. Diverticulosis, when our most common gut disorder hardly existed, and Does Fiber Really Prevent Diverticulosis? By Dr. Michael Greger at NutritionFacts.org. Diverticulosis, when our most common gut disorder hardly existed. More than two-thirds of Americans over age 60 have diverticulosis, but it was nearly unknown a century ago, and remained extremely rare among populations eating whole food plant-based diets. Diverticula are outpouchings from our intestine. Doctors like using a tire analogy. High pressures within the gut can force the intestines to balloon out through weak spots in the intestinal wall, like an inner tube poking out through a worn tire tread. These pockets can become inflamed and infected, and to carry the tire analogy further, can blow out, spilling fecal matter into the abdomen or the bladder, and lead to death. Symptoms can range from no symptoms at all, to a little cramping and bloating, to incapacitating pain that is a medical emergency. 9 out of 10 people who die from the disease never even knew they had it. But the good news is that there may be a way to prevent the disease. Diverticular disease is the most common intestinal disorder, affecting up to 70% of people by age 60. If it's that common, though, maybe it's just an inevitable consequence of aging. No, it's a new disease. In 1907, 25 cases had been reported in the medical literature. Not in 25% of people, but 25 cases, period. And they're kind of hard to miss on autopsy. 100 years ago, in 1916, it didn't even merit mention in medical and surgical textbooks. The mystery wasn't solved until 1971. How did a disease that was almost unknown become the most common affliction of the colon in the Western world within one lifespan? Surgeons Painter and Burkitt suggested diverticulosis was a deficiency disease, a disease caused by a deficiency of fiber. In the late 1800s, roller milling was introduced, further removing fiber from grain, and we started to fill up on fiber-deficient foods like meat and sugar. A few decades of this, and diverticulosis was rampant. This is what they thought was going on. Just as it would be easy to squeeze a lump of butter through a bicycle tube, it's easy to move large, soft, moist intestinal contents through the gut. In contrast, try squeezing through a lump of tar. When we eat fiber-deficient diets, our feces can become small and firm, and so our intestines really have to squeeze hard to move them along, and this buildup of pressure may force out those bulges. And eventually, a low-fiber diet can sometimes lead to the colon literally rupturing itself. If this theory is true, then populations who eat high-fiber diets would have low rates of diverticulosis. And that's what's been found. More than 50% of African Americans in their 50s were found to have diverticulosis, compared to less than 1% in African Africans eating traditional plant-based diets. And by less than 1%, we're talking 0 out of a series of 2,000 autopsies, 2 out of 4,000 in Uganda. That's like 1,000 times lower prevalence. What then about this newer study concluding that a low-fiber diet was not associated with diverticulosis? We'll cover that next. Does fiber really prevent diverticulosis? The parable of the tiny parachute explains the study that found no relationship between dietary fiber intake and diverticulosis. A study out of the University of North Carolina found no association between dietary fiber intake and diverticulosis in comparing the group that ate the highest amount, 25 grams, 3 times the amount of the lowest fiber intake group. They concluded that a low-fiber diet was not associated with diverticulosis. The university sent out a press release, "Diets high in fiber won't protect against diverticulosis." The press picked it up. Study finds high-fiber diet may not protect against diverticulosis went all over the paleo blogs and even medical journals, an important paper calling into question the fiber theory of the development of diverticulosis. Other editorials, though, caught the critical flaw. To understand this, let's turn to another dietary deficiency disease, scurvy. Medical experiments on prisoners at the Iowa State Penitentiary showed that clinical signs of scurvy start appearing after just 29 days without vitamin C. Experiments on pacifists during World War II showed the same thing, that it takes about 10 milligrams of vitamin C a day to prevent scurvy. So imagine going back in time a few centuries when they were still trying to figure scurvy out. Dr. James Lind had this radical theory that citrus fruits could cure scurvy. What if an experiment were designed to test this crazy theory, in which sailors were given the juice of either one wedge of lemon or three wedges of lemon a day? If a month later on the high seas there was no difference in scurvy rates, one might see headlines where the printing press pamphleteers would all be touting the study that found that a low vitamin C diet is not associated with scurvy. See, a wedge of lemon only yields about 2 milligrams of vitamin C, and it takes 10 milligrams to prevent scurvy, so they would have been comparing 2 milligrams a day to like 7 milligrams a day, one vitamin C deficient dose to another vitamin C deficient dose. No wonder there would be no difference in scurvy rates. We evolved eating so many plants that we likely averaged around 600 milligrams of vitamin C a day. That's what our bodies are biologically used to getting. What about fiber? How much fiber are we used to getting? Over 100 grams a day. The highest fiber intake group in the North Carolina study was eating only 25 grams, which is less than the minimum recommended daily allowance, which is about 32 grams. They didn't even make the minimum. So they compared one fiber-deficient diet to another fiber-deficient diet. No wonder there was no difference in diverticulosis rates. The African populations, where they had essentially no diverticulosis, ate diets consisting in part of very large platefuls of leafy vegetables, similar perhaps to what we were eating a few million years ago. They were eating plant-based diets containing 70 to 90 grams of fiber a day. Most vegetarians don't even eat that many whole plant foods, though some do. In one study, at least they hit the minimum mark and had less diverticulosis to show for it. This was a relatively small study, though. 35 years later, 47,000 people were studied, confirming that consuming a vegetarian diet and a high intake of dietary fiber were both associated with a lower risk of both hospitalization and death from diverticular disease. And they had enough people to tease it out, compared to those eating a single serving of meat a day or more. Those who ate less than half a serving appeared to have a 16% lower risk. Pescatarians, no meat except fish, down 23%, though not in and of themselves statistically significant, but eating vegetarian was 35% lower risk, and those eating strictly plant-based appeared to be at 78% lower risk. As with all lifestyle interventions, it only works if you do it. High-fiber diets only work when they're actually high in fiber. You just listened to Diverticulosis, When Our Most Common Gut Disorder Hardly Existed, and Does Fiber Really Prevent Diverticulosis? By Dr. Michael Greger at NutritionFacts.org. And I'm your host, Marian Erickson, and I'll link a couple of other episodes in the show notes that are related to this topic. 319, Lose 2 pounds in One Sitting, Taking the Myocenic Route, and 320, How to Keep Your Microbiome Healthy with Prebiotic Foods and the 5-to-1 Fiber Rule, by Dr. Michael Greger at NutritionFacts.org. So please share this episode with anyone who might benefit. And if you know someone who doesn't want to give up their meat, suggest they switch to a plant-based brand that contains fiber. And thanks for listening.